The car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Beyond the Junkyard podcast. I am your host, Junkyard James. It is a Monday morning, but I had to give my morning after reactions to the AEW Dynasty pay-per-view from last night. There is a lot of discourse on social media about this show, and AEW has never been talked about more than it has been today. Is it for good reasons or bad? We'll discuss that here in this show. But before we get going, I'd like to shout out one of our sponsors, affiliate partners for the podcast, and that is StubHub. Hey, do you know that feeling when you snag the perfect seats to a game or a concert that you've been dying to see? That's what StubHub is all about. Whether it's courtside for the playoffs, front row for your favorite band, or just a spontaneous night out, StubHub's got you covered. It's super easy. You browse events, pick your tickets, and boom, you're in. No sketchy resellers, no stress, just a secure way to get authentic tickets every time. Plus, with their Fan Protect guarantee, you know they've got your back if plans change. Right now, head over to the link in the description box below. Check out what's happening near you. Maybe those last-minute deals are calling your name. StubHub, real tickets, real moments, real simple. Go make some memories. Hey, y'all, go check out the link for all of our affiliate partners in the description below. And thank you for StubHub for partnering with the Beyond the Junkyard podcast. Let's jump into what I want to talk about, which is, I think there was a theme to this pay-per-view tonight, and that is Tony Khan was giving us a lesson in delayed gratification, because there are several matches on this card where people were wanting something to happen and something else happened. And so Tony Khan is saying, listen, y'all, I'm not going to just hand you what you want. I'm not going to give the social media crowd everything they want when they want it. You're going to have to ride with me and ride the wave of the story, ride the wave of emotions. And there is a lesson to be learned here, which is sometimes delayed gratification will make the moment sweeter than instant gratification, something that a lot of people on social media need to learn. But let's break down this show match by match. I believe if I scored it correctly, we'll have to wait until I get back from vacation to hear the official numbers. But if I scored it correctly, I think I went 9-2 predicting this show last night. It was a good show from start to finish. I think it wasn't AEW's best pay-per-view. I'll be honest. It's tough because AEW Dynasty last year in St. Louis blew the roof off of the building. It was one of the greatest pay-per-views AEW has ever put on. Will Ospreay and Bryan Danielson, I believe, was on that card. Swerve beat Samoa Joe for the belt. And so it's hard to put out a sophomore year event when the freshman year event was so good. And I don't think it filled the shoes of last year. I would put last year's Dynasty over this year's Dynasty. But it was what it needed to be. It was, at the worst, a B-plus pay-per-view. And in some eyes, it may have been an A-minus pay-per-view for some people. Now, it wasn't perfect. It had its moments of where it lacked substance. Some matches went a little long. The show in general went very long. And so it wasn't a perfect pay-per-view, but I think Tony Khan is now setting the distinction that we have A-tier pay-per-views and we have B-tier pay-per-views. And so the A-tier pay-per-views are like Revolution. They're All In. It's World's End. Like, those are your main pay-per-views where major story plots will begin and end. And then you have your B-tier pay-per-views, things like Dynasty, Wrestle Dream, All Out, Full Gear, that are in this category of, you might not see a lot of ending of stories, but you're going to get continuation of current events. And that's what I saw with this show. We're obviously leading to All In. And if we want to compare All In to WrestleMania, you have to say Dynasty is almost, I don't know how many people remember this pay-per-view, but the pay-per-view before WrestleMania used to be Fastlane. And it wasn't meant to be a pay-per-view that gave you a whole lot of new. You weren't going to get a lot of new champions. You weren't going to get a lot of new stories being told. It was just meant to get you, to connect you from Royal Rumble to WrestleMania. And that is exactly what I feel like Dynasty did. It connected us between Revolution and then Double or Nothing, which is another A-tier pay-per-view, which will then lead us from Double to Double or Nothing. We have the 4-hour TV spot, Fighter Fest in June, which, so Double or Nothing, then Fighter Fest will lead us into All In. You have to understand, I think this is the direction Tony Khan has taken the company. Every pay-per-view is not going to be on the same pedestal as each other. There are going to be A-tier pay-per-views and B-tier pay-per-views, and that is what I believe we saw. Dynasty, I think, is now going to be, in the scheme of storytelling and booking, a B-tier pay-per-view. And it did what it needed to do to get us to the next piece of the story. Let's start with 0 Hour. Crew, Action Andretti and Leo Rush, tag team with Nick Wayne in a trios match against AR Fox and Top Flight, which is Dante and Darius Martin. They were accompanied to the ring by the always gorgeous baddie Layla Gray. And Crew and Nick Wayne pick up the win. Nick Wayne gets the pin. And this is perfect. Why? Because I think we can continue or maybe put an end to the Crew Top Flight storyline. But you're going to promote Nick Wayne, who was announced to be in the Best of the Super Juniors tournament in Japan. And you gotta give Nick Wayne TV time so that people have a reason to care why he's going to the Super Junior tournament. This is perfect. At a perfect time, it seems like the patriarchy's falling apart. You can send Nick Wayne to Japan. You can take Mama Wayne off of TV for a little bit of time. You can have Edge and Christian, or Copeland and Christian, come in and have that one last tag team run. We'll discuss that later in the show. This just seems like the perfect time for Nick Wayne to kind of get out of this faction of the patriarchy and go and do his own thing and prove himself in Japan at the Best of the Super Juniors. And Tony Khan did this with Anna Jay, which sadly it seemed like her steam kind of rolled off late into 2024 when she came back to AEW. And we're hoping that this happens with Nick Wayne, where they push him into Japan, he gets better and develops as a singles wrestler because of the Japanese style, comes back to AEW, and can use what he's learned in Japan to better himself in AEW. So this match was what it was meant to be. It got the fans into Liacora Center in Philadelphia and got them on their feet. The crowd was pretty hype for this match. And then we had the Max Caster Best Wrestler Alive Open Challenge, and we get the re-debut. And the reason I say re-debut is because it's a new version of Anthony Bowens. No longer is he screaming, "Scissor me, daddy ass." He's now screaming that he's the pride of pro wrestling. He's a five-tool player, and he's ready to take names and kick ass. And that's what he did. A 40-second beatdown of Max Caster wins the open challenge. And that's all it needed to be. His presentation was great. The entrance was good. The music is good. The visual is good for Anthony Bowens. But once again, Max Caster takes a loss. And so where does Max Caster's story go? Where does Anthony Bowens go? Does this lead to a feud between Caster and Bowens? Or is this just the closing of the door of the Acclaimed, and Caster goes, and they finally go their separate ways, and they don't intermingle with each other for a while? It's tough to see. I'm assuming, because Bowens re-debuted, we'll probably see him on Dynamite this Wednesday night. But it was a good pre-show. It was a good 0 hour, good fun way to get people into the seats. I go to Cage Match when I want to see how people react in a good way. You go to social media, you go to Twitter, you go to the Facebook groups, you're going to get the bottom dwellers and their opinions. But I think you go to Cage Match, and for the most part, you can get some rational idea of where the fans feel this win. And here, I kind of agree with this opinion. They rate it, the 0 hour portion, a 7 out of 10, said pretty much exactly what you could want out of a pre-show, fun six man, and a quickie after some local heel heat. They said the Ben Simmons Boathouse Row jersey is an incredible touch even after all these years. They say, "I'm not a regular AEW watcher, but Anthony Bowen seemed very over and has a lot of physical charisma. Definitely would like to see more of him." There we go. This is exactly what the pre-show is meant to do. Get the people who maybe don't watch so much to find someone that they want to watch more, and it gets them invested into watching AEW. I'd say that's a success for 0 hour. Nothing drastic, nothing unpredictable, but it got people interested in watching the show and maybe even buying the pay-per-view. When we get to the main card, and look, Cage Match, this pay-per-view is going to have a low rating, I have a feeling, because of the ending of the show. And we'll talk about the ending, obviously, at the end, and I have my opinion on the end. But I think overall, this was a very good pay-per-view. It was a well-rounded pay-per-view. In my opinion, it started at about an 8, and it ended at right about an 8. And so, it was very consistent, very good from a pay-per-view perspective. We start the show with Will Ospreay and Kevin Knight opening the Owen Hart Foundation 2025 men's side of the tournament. Ospreay beats Kevin Knight, but this was a showdown of physical specimens and athletic ability from both wrestlers. Kevin Knight looked really good. Will Ospreay looked very good. Kevin Knight, again, he just signed with AEW, filling the shoes of Jay White. Well, he's going to the Best of the Super Juniors as well with Nick Wayne. So obviously you weren't going to give him this win. but you showcase him in a way that shows, hey, this guy is the future, and that's what AEW's been good at doing here for the last couple of the last while now, is not necessarily having to rest on the laurels of the past, but focusing on the future of AEW, Will Ospreay, Kevin Knight, Swerve Strickland, etc., 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 to get them to the future of where AEW wants to be and not where they have been. Ospreay gets the W. He advances to the next round of the Owen Hart tournament. Very good match. For most of this show, this was my match of the night, or it was tied for match of the night, because I'm going to be honest with you, there were a couple sneaky matches that kind of competed for match of the night that I really didn't expect. And Ospreay and Kevin Knight, I thought they would have a good match, and they set the world on fire. The second match of the night on the main card, AEW World Tag Team Championship match, the Hurt Syndicate against Big Bill and Brian Keith, and it wasn't a great match. And I didn't think it would be some, you know, 5-star classic. It was probably like a 3-star match, in my opinion. But the Hurt Syndicate get the win with a little bit of interference with MJF, who shows up, and he helped kind of carry the ending of that match. The fans kind of died off at the end there. But MJF is helping the Hurt Syndicate. And again, progressing story leading up to something. Where does MJF fit in to the big picture of this story? You have to tune in Wednesday to see. So for the fact of it advances story, and I think this helps effectively end the learning tree, it did its job. And the Hurt Syndicate retained. They're still tag team champions. And wonder who's next to fight the Hurt Syndicate. Then we move in to open the Owen Hart tournament on the women's side of the bracket. We get Mercedes Moné and Julia Hart. And now, this is one of those matches where I felt it could have competed with Ospreay and Kevin Knight early on for match of the night. Julia Hart, this was her best match I think she's had in quite a while. There were a couple spots that were sloppy. Mercedes Moné does her thing that she's always done. I just gotta be honest, this is Mercedes Moné's best run of her wrestling career. She just keeps putting on banger match after banger match after banger match. And so Mercedes Moné and Julia Hart, no different. It wasn't her best match. It wasn't Mercedes' best match. It probably was Julia Hart's best match. And it got me thinking at several different times during the match, oh, Julia Hart might actually pull off the win. We're in Philadelphia. And so Julia Hart pulls off the, I can't remember what it's called, but it would make Tajiri proud at some of the maneuvers that she was doing. And she put on the Black Widow. Shout out to AJ Lee. And it was just a very good match. Both women looked really good. Mercedes Moné picks up the win. This is one of the matches that I predicted wrong. And so, obviously, I wanted Julia Hart to win, but Mercedes Moné gets the win. It makes logical sense. This was, honestly, for me, a tough match to predict. I was fantasy booking a little bit when I picked Julia Hart to win. And obviously, the story goes, Mercedes Moné goes in, 13-minute match. At this point, one of the longest matches on the card. And here we go, straight into the next match. This is what I love about AEW pay-per-views. Match goes, match ends, next match starts. There's no filler. And yeah, the show went long, but at least it didn't go 4.5 hours with half the show being commercials and a rap concert and all of that other stuff that you're going to get at a WWE show. You get 4.5 hours of pro wrestling. So we jump right in to the AEW World Trios match, where the Death Riders fight Rated FTR and The match goes. Kind of exactly how you would expect it. Dax Harwood, tries to hit a move. I believe it was Claudio moves out of the way. One of the Death Rider members move out of the way. Incidental contact with Cope. Ends up, Death Riders retain. We get the end of the segment. And this is the whole point of this match. Wasn't necessarily the match, but the follow through with the match, where Dax Harwood and Cash, Cash Wheeler and Dax Harwood turn on Adam Copeland. I mentioned earlier that it's a good thing for Nick Wayne. He gets to go off on his own. Well, it seems like the patriarchy's falling apart. Copeland just got turned on by Rated FTR. This is obviously everyone speculating. We're probably getting FTR versus Cajun Copeland at All In or at some point in the future. A one final tag team push for what in their prime could be considered one of the best tag teams WWE has ever had. We get to see the AEW rendition towards the end of their career, and they're just going to have a good time with it. We get heel FTR, which is something we haven't seen in quite some time. And so, good stuff coming out of the tag match. It was a good trios match, and Death Riders win. And so at this point in the show, I'm like, oh, the Death Riders win. I feel pretty good about the main event. Well, let's just continue going on. And this is where, if I had to have one complaint about this show, it would be this. For the second pay-per-view in a row, the Women's World title is effectively a mid-card match with other matches such as Bandido and Chris Jericho, Kyle Fletcher and Mark Briscoe, going after with Toni Storm and Megan Bain taking up the middle portion of this feud. They had a 15-minute banger. Megan Bain comes out with Penelope Ford, and she's just a dominant figure. She looks really good just in presentation. She doesn't have to speak. I know a lot of people are mad that Megan Bain doesn't speak, but her presence speaks for her, so she doesn't have to say anything. Toni Storm comes out, rocking the Rocky apparel. We get the little promo piece where she's like, the little vignette where she's, I guess, getting ready for the day, like Rocky would get ready for a fight, and she's Rocky Balboa Tony Balboa in the city of Philadelphia. She comes out and beats Megan Bain in a really good match. Penelope Ford tries to interfere in the middle. Luther carries her away, equalizing Megan Bain, and Toni Storm beats Megan Bain. And I get it. People are kind of upset about the finish. People are kind of upset that Megan Bain didn't get the belt because of her aura and her presence. This is that delayed gratification I was talking about. If you can think ahead to All In, which is obviously where Tony Khan is booking towards. He's not booking pay-per-view to pay-per-view. He's booking from now to All In, with All In as the big picture. Obviously, the big picture is going to be Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm. It hits you right in the face. I hear people on podcasts this weekend saying, like, Billy Starks has an opportunity to win this tournament, or Mercedes Moné, or Athena has a chance to win. No, it's always been Thunder Rosa. This is Thunder Rosa's moment. We're going to get the Thunder Rosa Toni Storm match. We should have gotten when Thunder Rosa was champion, and Thunder Rosa's going to get her moment in her hometown. Does she win the belt? At that point, I don't know, but she's going to get her hometown crowd audience. I said that when they announced All In Texas, that the women's match Thunder Rosa would be a part of. It's Thunder Rosa. And so this is obviously where it leads. You can't have the white hot baby face being Thunder Rosa against the the, you know, I don't know. They're the leading to Ollie, and I'll just say that. And the delayed gratification is going to be Thunder Rosa has her match with Toni Storm, the match that we've been waiting several years to get. And so, but here's the thing. Megan Bain looked great in this match. She took three hip attacks, three asses to the face by Toni Storm. Toni Storm goes to pin her. She kicks out at one. What? That was awesome. It popped me. It was a great piece. And this is, I said this on social media last night, this match was a classic case of even though you lose a match, it doesn't mean you got buried, and you actually could look very strong going into the match. Like, Megan Bain lost, but she lost to one of the best wrestlers in AEW, which is Toni Storm. And so, Megan Bain looked really good and pushed Toni Storm to the limit, and that's where the story's going. So, does Megan Bain get a rematch, or who's the next opponent for Toni Storm? Guess what? Cliffhanger, tune in on Wednesday, and you'll probably figure it out. All right, we lead in into Kyle Fletcher versus Mark Briscoe. A 16-minute banger of a match. Everyone complaining that Mark Briscoe's are always in these tournaments, but Mark Briscoe always loses in the tournaments. He always puts on good matches. He's always a clear, safe wrestler. He's always a fan favorite. And him and Kyle Fletcher just have such chemistry together. What a great match this was. One of the better matches of the night. And it, to me, really, really overperformed in my opinion. Because this didn't have to go as hard as it did. But I'm glad it went as hard as it did. Kyle Fletcher and Mark Briscoe battled tonight. And Kyle Fletcher gets the win, beats Mark Briscoe, advances to the Owen Hart tournament. The fans loved the match. Kyle Fletcher looks absolutely unstoppable as the proto star with Don Callis behind him. We get Don Callis on commentary, and I have to say, Don Callis might need to make a permanent space on the commentary team because he's just really good at commentary. He's really good on the mic, and I love when he's on commentary talking about Fletcher and his guys, and great match overall, just from start to finish. It delivered, 16-minute banger, and Kyle Fletcher moves on in the Owen Hart tournament. We are moving into Bandido versus Chris Jericho. Mask versus title match for the ROH World title. Jericho is the champion coming in. When we have this really good match, it's a luchador style match where it kind of starts off a little slow, trying to figure each other out, and then it picks up at the end. Jericho comes in. There's a ref, not necessarily a ref bump, but the referee is distracted. Aubrey Edwards comes out. I think there was some form of interference. I want to say the Learning Tree came out at some point. I can't quite honestly remember. But there was some form of distraction of the ref. Jericho grabs the belt, the baseball bat, hits Bandido in the head. The ref doesn't see it. Jericho hides the belt. 1, 2, 3. Bandido has lost his mask. And the crowd is stunned. But wait, oh wait, Aubrey Edwards is still out there. Bandido's mom and Bandido's sister says Jericho used the bat. We can show you. He hit it. We saw it. Aubrey Edwards allows them into the ringside area to point out the bat. They restart the match. Jericho's complaining to the ref, Paul Turner, I believe it was, that this is unfair. He won. Bandido hits him with the 21-plex. Wins the ROH title. Again, effectively putting an end to the Learning Tree. Now, there's rumors Jericho, his contract's about up, and he may be heading back to WWE. He didn't rule out a return to WWE. So if this is the way they write Jericho off of AEW television, I wouldn't be disappointed with it. Bandido gets the ROH belt, and ROH is now in a good place with that world title. Bandido is the champion, and he's going to have really good feuds, and ROH is in a good place. Move into the no time limit match with Adam Cole and Daniel Garcia. And early on in the match, they played into Adam Cole's injury. Adam Cole played it really well. Daniel Garcia was trying to hit all of Adam Cole's moves, Panama Sunrise, the Boom. And it was just a really good psychological match. No outside interference, which I loved. The no time limit match. Adam Cole, ultimately, 17 years to the date of his debut in pro wrestling in Philadelphia, gets the win, ending Daniel Garcia's TNT title reign. Adam Cole's the new TNT champion. And to be honest, let's talk about Danny Garcia's title reign for a minute. It wasn't great. In fact, one may say it was a little lackluster. And Daniel Garcia didn't really do a whole lot with the belt. Hopefully he can repackage himself and come back stronger. And who knows, maybe Kool Aid Ange, Daddy Magic, and Danny Garcia become a trio, and maybe they, you know, run their way up the gauntlet of the trios tournament, the trios division. Who knows where Daniel Garcia goes from here. Who's going to be Adam Cole's first opponent for the TNT title? I'm interested into seeing that. It seems like Anthony Bowens could maybe run, but he's a face now, so you can't really run face versus face. I mean, I guess you could, but you probably wouldn't. There's just a lot of options that you can go with Adam Cole. Is it Josh Alexander? Is it, you know, is it a new debuting guy, or is it somebody already established on the roster? Is it Roderick Strong? Like, do they pull that? Is it Kyle O'Reilly? Who kind of has dual allegiances with the Undisputed Kingdom and the Conglomeration? Is it Orange Cassidy? Like, who knows? Who's the next first person Adam Cole defends the belt against? We'll have to figure out as the story progresses. Just tune in on Wednesday. We might get a little more information. I'm going to say that a lot. Is tune in on Wednesday. If you want more to the story, tune in on Wednesday. Or watch prior episodes or something, and you can get more information. We head to the second to last match, the International Title 3-way match, Mike Bailey versus Ricochet versus the champion Kenny Omega. And this match went really long. It was about 31 minutes, but it went about as long as I assumed it would go. Let's just be honest. They weren't giving this match 20 minutes, 15 minutes. This was going to have to go 30 to get the whole, everyone to get the spots they need to get in, to get in. Ricochet comes in, and he has this thing now where he takes commentary, the headset off of Shivani or Excalibur or somebody, and Ricochet took it off of Shivani, and Speedball Mike Bailey kicked the ever-living shit out of Ricochet, and I think broke the mic. The headset, because that one went dead. Maybe they just muted the mic, I don't know, for the effect, but really good match. Really, they all hit their spots. Kenny Omega, to me, is still the best bout machine, still one of the best wrestlers to ever do it in the business, and he just performed again. He performed again, and he retained the title. But the moment we were waiting for occurred after the match. So this match was match of the night. Far and away the best match on the card. Kenny Omega is a really good wrestler. Ricochet is a really good heel, and it's about time you respect Pretty Ricky. And Mike Bailey is just really good at what he does as well. This match went and did exactly what I assumed it would do, which was set up and probably continue the feud with Mike Bailey and Ricochet. They're probably going to feud. And then Kenny Omega, now we get the stare down at the end of the match with Okada and Omega planting seeds for All In. It's going to be, again, All In is the mindset. They're already booking ahead to All In. And so All In's the mindset. Okada appears, stares down Omega, walks out, and here we go. Now we get the run to All In, the Continental Champion versus the International Champion. Rumors are they combine the belts, or are they calling it the Intercontinental Champion, or something like that. I don't know what they'll call it. And Omega Okada looks to be the trajectory for All In, and I'm totally, totally ecstatic, because if you watched any of their New Japan matches, you know they're going to tear the house down in Arlington, Texas at All In. And then we get to the main event. John Moxley defends the AEW World title against Swerve Strickland in a match that went 31 minutes and 14 seconds. So the last two matches on the show combined for over an hour, which is totally fine, is totally to be expected. This entire card went about 4.5 hours, a little bit longer than I would have preferred. There was a good chance maybe you could have put like Bandido and Chris Jericho on the pre-show, but it was for the ROH belt, and so it there was a lot of stakes behind it, so I understand why they didn't do that. You could have put Fletcher and Briscoe maybe, but it was one of the better matches. They had a lot of just empty time on the 0 hour. I felt like you could have taken one of these matches, put it on the 0 hour, had 3 0-hour matches, and then it didn't have to go so long, the main card. That's just a small, minute detail of the show, though. We get Moxley versus Swerve, and this was a physical match, a beatdown, a slobber knocker. Moxley, listen, people like to say that he can't wrestle, but he gets it. He is one of the smartest wrestling minds in the business. He is one of the only heels at this moment in time that gets you to feel something, to really feel anger. People hate this guy. People hate John Moxley. They want him to drop the belt so badly. And that's what makes a good heel, is that you feel this anger at this character. And he's playing it, he's playing you like a fiddle. He's cooking you like a fine prime rib, falling right off the bone, melt right in the mouth. John Moxley is playing his part, and he's doing a damn good job at doing it here recently. Listen, I was tired of this feud a while ago, but it's gotten better the last couple of months, and they've injected new life into this story. Swerve stomp through the Spanish announce table from a ladder onto Moxley. We get the ref bump. We get Adam Page to come out, and he looks like he's about to hit the dead eye on Swerve. Hesitates, looks at John Moxley, and then gets beat from behind by the Death Riders. Well, out of the blue, the Ops, who said on Wednesday, "You bet they better not catch you lacking," and they caught the Death Riders lacking, and they came up and beat the ever-living shit out of the Death Riders. The Ops are helping out Swerve Strickland, it seems. Swerve goes to hit him with his finishing maneuver, and the lights go out. Oh my God, who is coming to the aid of the Death Riders? The EVPs. The Young Bucks. The lights appear. Matt and Nick Jackson holding Swerve Strickland. EVP trigger. 1, 2, 3, John Moxley retains the AEW World Championship in Philadelphia to a sea of boos. And it's like Tony Khan watched WrestleMania 39, also in Philadelphia, and said, we're going to play the Bloodline storyline, but our way. Because if you look at the end of WrestleMania 39, Cody Rhodes has Roman Reigns set for the crossroads. And out of nowhere, the Samoan Spike by Solo Sikoa. And Roman Reigns beat Cody Rhodes in the match where, listen, I was pissed off when that happened. I said verbally several times this was WWE's moment to make the next super hot babyface. And so I get your frustration that Swerve lost, but I learned something in that moment. While WrestleMania 39 would have been a great moment for WWE to build a super babyface in Cody Rhodes, the delayed gratification, the 1 year struggle that Cody Rhodes had to battle through to get to WrestleMania 40 made him winning the belt and storyline much more sweeter. Now, WWE fucked up the run to WrestleMania 40 by introducing The Rock and then making it like the Avengers versus the Bloodline and bringing out John Cena and The Undertaker and all these people that have no, you know, they made it a superhero story. AEW isn't going to go that far. But the Young Bucks make actual sense here. The last time the Young Bucks were seen, they had lost the AEW Tag Team Championships to Mark Quinn and Isaiah Cassidy, Private Party. And we see them in their locker room shredding documentation, some form of documentation. We were wondering at that moment in time, why the fuck are they showing us this? Why are they shredding documents? What is there to hide? Well, what was there to hide seemed to be revealed last night. They're working with the Death Riders, and they're pulling the strings all along. And the story makes sense. The story makes sense. Delayed gratification. Because this either goes one of two ways now. Either Swerve gets a rematch at Double or Nothing, and we get Swerve Strickland in Glendale, Arizona, beating John Moxley and holding up the belt to end the night. Where later in the night, Adam Hangman Page wins the Owen Finals, and they set up what we assumed they were going to start setting up tonight, which was Swerve versus Hangman 4 at All In. Or we go to Double or Nothing. Will Ospreay wins the Owen Hart Finals, and we get Jon Moxley versus the biggest babyface in AEW, which is the Billy Goat Will Ospreay. And in the main event, and the biggest scene on American soil for a non-WWE wrestling promotion, Will Ospreay leaves Texas as AEW champion. And if you look at it through that lens, it makes a lot of fucking sense why they moved the start time of All In to be 3 p.m. Eastern Time, so that the British crowd can see their king, their guy, Will Ospreay, in a good hour for them where they're not dying of sleep deprivation, win the fucking belt. But yet, We have these fans on social media who think they know everything about AEW and that they can fantasy book wrestling and that they're a wrestling genius when in reality, they know nothing about long-term storytelling. They know nothing about how AEW is working behind the scenes. They've never spoken to Tony Khan and to think that they can get inside of his mind. And you have guys that are AEW loyalists saying that this was a shit end of the show and a waste of time, and it's not. We're getting the delayed gratification. They're like, oh, they're waiting for Darby Allin's plans are scrapped. Darby Allin will not be the AEW World Champion. The plan now is Will, by God, Ospreay. Can you not see it? They wouldn't have let him go on mic and basically plead with AEW management, if you gave me the ball I'm going to score. They wouldn't let him point to the all-in sign. They wouldn't let him dictate this whole narrative around the Owen if it wasn't Will Ospreay, who was the guy to be the hero and the savior of AEW. I get it. In the moment, we're pissed off. I wanted Swerve Strickland to win. I wanted history to repeat each other. But the storyline makes sense. And we're coming to a point where Hangman Page is going to fight the wild card. In the Owen Hart tournament. And I thought for sure they would debut Josh Alexander in this moment for the Owen Hart. But I'm not so sure now. Because I have two guys in mind that I think would be perfect wild cards and could paint a really good picture as to what we're going to get at AEW All in Texas. And the first would be Jack Perry. If the Young Bucks are helping the Death Riders, we're assuming the Elite in general were helping the Death Riders, which means Jack Perry is coming back, hopefully, maybe, as part of the Death Riders. And it would make sense in storyline to have a member of the Death Riders or somebody helping the Death Riders take out Hangman, because they took out Hangman last night. So it would make sense. But you will know who else would make sense. The man John Moxley thought he put out of his wrestling career, who they thought he retired. Arizona is Bella country. Arizona is a second home to Bryan Danielson. And so could Bryan Danielson be this wild card? And he beats Hangman Page in the first round, and he beats Kyle Fletcher, I believe would be who he would fight in the second round. And it's Will Ospreay versus the man, the myth, the legend, Bryan Danielson again. Remember, Ospreay lost to Danielson, I believe, at Dynasty last year. Swerve beat Danielson for the belt. I'm sorry, Swerve lost to Danielson. Danielson took the belt off of Swerve at All In last year. I'm trying to get the picture painted. Moxley took the belt off of Danielson. Danielson comes back. And it's Ospreay versus Danielson. Who are the Death Riders going to take out? But I could also see this being what Cody Marinara has been saying for a couple weeks now. There needed to be somebody to infiltrate the Death Riders from the inside. You're not strong enough to beat them
from the outside, so you had to join them to beat them from the inside. And what if the Young Bucks, that's their plan, is to beat the Death Riders from the inside. And so you appease them for a little bit before you tear them down. The point of the matter is I get how much people wanted to see Swerve Strickland win the belt last night. But obviously we're looking at the big picture, and it doesn't make sense for Swerve Strickland to just beat Jon Moxley without suffering a little bit. And so you really can go down the road at Swerve, let's just say, for the sake of controversy, Swerve Strickland makes an alliance with the Hurt Syndicate. And so you can have your tag team champion scene be the Hurt Syndicate, Bobby Lashley, and Shelton Benjamin going up against the Young Bucks at Double or Nothing. You can have your trios be the Ops versus the Death Riders. And then you could have Swerve get his rematch against Jon Moxley with backup this time. In reality, though, I think what we're going to get at Double or Nothing is Jon Moxley's not even going to put the belt on the line. We're probably getting Anarchy in the Arena or Blood and Guts. And it'll be the Young Bucks, the Death Riders, and Jon Moxley against the Ops, Swerve Strickland. And the Hurt Syndicate. Let's just say for shits and giggles. 6v6 Anarchy in the Arena in Arizona. With the big picture being Jon Moxley loses it all in. Because again, like I said earlier, if All In is your WrestleMania equivalent, you're not having Jon Moxley lose at the equivalent of Fastlane. You're not having Jon Moxley lose the belt at the equivalent of Bad Blood or Elimination Chamber. You're going to have a really good match with a really good story with Swerve Strickland, but Swerve was never planned to win this match. Because the plan is for, at All In, the guy who has been grinding his ass off for AEW, Will Ospreay, is the one who defeats the Death Riders. Who defeats Jon Moxley. Excuse me. And so my plea to the AEW fans is don't jump off the bandwagon just yet. Don't jump. Don't switch sides. Don't switch alliances. The story's getting good again. The story has an emphasis on a new chapter. It's the same as the Bloodline, but different. And it's different because it's not super, super, like, I don't know. Like, there's actually decent wrestling, I guess, is what the point, like, the point of the Bloodline, the reason why I'm so fed up of the Bloodline is that they've just carried it on for far too long, that they're not telling any new stories, and they're just adding characters willy-nilly. That don't really make sense. Like, why is, you know, they're just adding characters for no reason. This makes sense. This is different than the Bloodline, but basically the same thing as the Bloodline storyline. And so, like the WWE fans said, give this this story time to breathe. Give this story time to play out. You're going to get Cody Rhodes winning the belt. You just have to wait another year. There's going to be delayed gratification. Listen, we don't even have to wait a year for our gratification. We just have to wait, what, 3 months? Are we that short-sighted that we lose sight of the big picture? This is exactly the way this story should have been told. And I said Swerve was going to win. And I'm sad he didn't win because I like Swerve Strickland as a wrestler. But this is, if you take the fantasy booking out of it, this is exactly the way Tony Khan should have booked this story. There's heat behind it. There's intrigue behind it. And it makes logical sense. It's logical. Of course the Young Bucks. The guys who Meltzer drivered the owner of the company in the center of the ring last year. Who tried to take AEW, take control of AEW, who beat the ever-living shit out of Kenny Omega, who beat the ever-living shit out of Christopher Daniels, and tried to effectively do a hostile takeover of AEW. Of course they're working with the Death Riders, who are trying to do a hostile takeover of AEW. Of course they're working hand in hand. And you look at it this way. If you watch any action movie, if the bad guys never won any of the battles, it would be the shortest action movie ever. First battle, when the bad guy loses, the good guys automatically win. There's no intrigue behind that. The fun part about an action movie is that the bad guy seemingly can't get beat. And then at the end, you find their weakness. And then they lose. And are thwarted and defeated. We haven't found the weakness of the Death Riders yet. We thought we saw it with Copeland. When he took out Moxley's lackeys. But they came back stronger than ever, and now they have new members. So the Death Riders don't have a weakness that we have seen. Now maybe the Young Bucks know the weakness. Or maybe the weakness is Will Ospreay is just a better wrestler than Jon Moxley. The point of the matter is we've been clamoring. The casuals on the other side have been clamoring for AEW to give them long-term storytelling. To give them a story. And they basically rinse, wash, and repeat the Bloodline story, which was praised and propagated for 5 years as the greatest wrestling story in all of wrestling history. And we do it a little bit differently, but it's effectively the same story. And everybody shits on it. No. I'm not going to sit here and say that this is what we should do. I'm not happy with the result, but I understand it. And I get it. With the big picture in mind, all in is where Will Ospreay wins the AEW championship. See, I picked Hangman Page to win the Owen Hart tournament. But now, big picture, it's Will Ospreay, and it's always been Will Ospreay. It's not Darby Allin. We don't have to wait that long. We just gotta wait a couple months. So maybe it's time we stop fantasy booking this shit and thinking that we know what Tony Khan's gonna do. And just come into watching these pay-per-views with the idea that anything can happen. And that's what's so great about AEW, is anything can happen. I wouldn't be fucking surprised if in Boston, Massachusetts at Spring Breakthrough, Shane McMahon shows up and they make fun of when WCW got bought out by WWE, and Shane McMahon opens up AEW Dynamite that night, and a spoof of what happened on the last night of Monday Nitro. Because Tony Khan is in an era where he doesn't give a fuck what the people around him, with the talking heads and the journalists and the fans, he doesn't really care what you have to say. He's going to book the show the way it makes the best business sense for AEW. And he's in the weeds right now, and he's booking a really good show. He's booking really good programming. And AEW has been really good. And I'm not going to sit here and change my mind and say Tony Khan is a bad booker simply because I disagree with his decision. I'm going to let the story play out. Now listen, I wasn't a fan of how the Copeland versus Moxley story ended at Revolution. That, what was a 10 pay-per-view to me, ended up an 8 pay-per-view because of that. This makes sense. That didn't make sense. So I understand your frustration with Christian losing his contract and all of that bullshit. That didn't make sense. The Young Bucks coming back makes sense. It just makes sense. Logically, go back in time. Again, AEW is not for the people that are casually just watching. You have to understand and pay attention to little key things that happen, and it could have happened 6 months ago, and we're just now getting it coming to fruition today. And so, I'll end the podcast by saying this. Tune in on Wednesday night. I'm flying to Orlando, Florida Wednesday morning. I'm on vacation. I am making sure, come hell or high water, then I'm doing nothing at 8 o'clock on Wednesday night. Because I'm going to tune in my hotel room to AEW Dynamite. And I'm going to sit there, and I'm going to be amused and entertained by some of the best pro wrestling we've seen in a long time. And if I'm the only one, then so fucking be it. Because this is how it should have ended. This is the way it should have always ended. And it doesn't matter what you say on social media. You don't work for AEW. You don't work for WWE. At the end of the day, you can disagree with a booking decision. But if you're absolutely pissed off and crashing out over this decision, I want you to take a step back. Maybe go outside, ground yourself, go out barefoot, step in the grass, ground yourself to the earth, and take a look at a bird's eye view of AEW and where the story is going to go, because it's hitting you right in the face that it's Will Ospreay, but you're so blindsided because you wanted Swerve Strickland so badly, and I get it, I did too. But this story makes a lot of sense. We won't have a Thursday live stream with me and Cody Marinara this week because I'll be in Orlando, Florida. But we'll see you in 2 weeks. There's going to be a lot of stuff to talk about. We'll do a big catch-up, I guess, episode when we get back. I'm not sure if Mr. Cody Marinaro will put out any additional content during the week. He's surely free to do so. Stay tuned to the social media channels for any new episodes that come out or any new things that we're planning on doing. I'm Junkyard James. I think I've rocked the boat long enough. This is the Beyond the Junkyard podcast, where we rock the boat and sweeten the sauce. And Tony Khan sweetened that sauce in that main event picture. He just sweetened it all up last night. And what a good show it was. What a good show. I'm going to give AEW Dynasty an 8 out of 10. Like I said in the beginning, it started at about an 8. and it ended at about an 8. The show was really good. A match of the night was the trios match between Kenny Omega, Mike Bailey, and Ricochet, with close second being Tony Storm and Megan Bain. They had a really good match. Kyle Fletcher and Mark Briscoe. And then I think my shocker of the night, the match that overperformed the most, was Mercedes Moné and Julia Hart. I'll see you in a couple weeks. I'm going to still keep tabs on pro wrestling and make my opinions known on social media. So if you want to follow me on my personal social media account, it's IBEJYJ, IBEJYJ on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. I'll post there some. Tune in Wednesday to AEW Dynamite on TBS or on Max. It's going to be a spectacle. We'll learn more about what happens, I feel. We'll see. But I like the way the story is leading. Until the next time we meet, I'm Junkyard James. This is the Beyond the Junkyard podcast. We'll see you on the flip side. Enjoy wrestling, and we'll see you next time. Yeah! Beyond!